Episode 10.
Here we are. We made it.
We did it. All right.
Amazing. Just think, after this, we will be roughly 10 hours of recorded footage listening. So, yeah, it's been quite a journey. I think, you know, we've grown a lot, learned a lot. And today, hopefully, we will be able to sort of recap some of the episodes that we've had. There have been some developments, some corrections, some stories that need to be made. And maybe we can sort of tie it all together with some common themes that we've hit throughout the season.
So here we go with the season finale.
Let's jump right in. Episode 1, looking back, we talked about the ideal learning environment. And interestingly enough, as Nikhil and I were looking back at this, this was the episode that received the most feedback. Mm-hmm. Now, that could be one of two things. Most controversial, or people just stopped listening, right? So
let's go with most controversial.
Most controversial. But that's also lurking there in the background, just so everyone's aware. But yeah, in episode 1, we talked about what an ideal learning environment could look like. And we received some feedback from some professionals who maybe disagreed a little bit.
Yeah, one of the feedback, or I guess I heard this from a lot of people actually, our comments about having the lights off in mm-hmm. the majority of the room weren't taken so well by a lot of people.
Yeah.
It seemed that the prevailing consensus is, and we knew this when we said it, that having the lights on, keeping a more open environment,
mm-hmm.
Because I think even you'd agree, your room is a little more closed off to people who aren't a part of the group.
Yeah. And I think the most important thing that, you know, upon reflection, I understand, obviously, that what I do doesn't necessarily work best for everyone. So we appreciate the feedback, and I understand that. I think the point that I was trying to drive home was, whatever environment that is created is going to be one that's comfortable for students to feel like it's a safe place to learn. And if for teachers that's all the lights on and the windows open and a more open environment, that's great. I could definitely see that working for people. I was just simply stating what works for me and my students. And I also don't presume to know that what I do in my classroom works best for every single student. It's what works for me and what I've received positive feedback from my students on. But just like with anything in education, what works for one or some or most isn't going to work for all. If there were a silver bullet for anything in education, we would all be doing it and it would be working. But for me and my students, that's what we go with, and it seems to work. But yeah, so if the point came across that this is the only way to do it, or this is necessarily what you have to do to be successful, I hope that wasn't the case. And if it was, let me correct the record and say there are a lot of different ways for students and teachers to be successful. And what works for you won't work for me, maybe, and what works for me might not work for you. But I think as long as we're all working under the premise that we want students to be successful and we want to create that environment, then I think then we're moving in the right direction. But yeah, an ideal learning environment, there's not one set in stone way. And if we do that, then assuredly we're missing the point a little bit. So we appreciate the feedback. Thank you. And maybe I'll leave a window cracked going into next year. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, it's good to get feedback, and it's good to think about the systems that we work within.
Mm-hmm. The second episode, we talked about routines. We didn't really have much to add there other than both of us still continue our same routines for the most part.
Yep, that's right. I don't think my wife has cracked into my nighttime routine yet, and don't see it happening anytime soon. So I think one takeaway from that is routines are hard to break,
yeah,
for better or worse, right? Good routines or...
And they're hard to create, too.
Absolutely, they are. So, and I think we alluded to that within the episode. But hopefully it made some people think about, I certainly did, about why we do the things we do on a daily basis. And, you know, if you drove to work a different way once in a while, or even if you didn't, maybe if you were just aware of those routines within your day, a small win, right, from episode 2.
Right. All right, episode 3, I think, is where I got the most criticism.
Okay.
And so let me explain what happened. So this is the episode where we talked about a meaningful life and the impact that we can have and how to maximize that.
Mm-hmm.
And we did start off with the assumption that everyone wants to impact the world and also that they have the ability to.
Yeah, so those are two axioms that we started out with that really drove the discussion.
Yeah.
That we made conclusions based on those. And according to some of our listeners, they may be disagreed.
Yeah, those are not trivial axioms. We can't just say they're, you know, universally true.
Which we sort of did.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, we didn't, by not acknowledging that they weren't and going off that, we basically tried to claim that they were universal and they're not.
Right.
And so I guess we want to go back to that episode and say all the things we said there were based on that premise.
Yeah.
And if you take that premise, then yes, effective altruism is a great thing, or at least we were talking about its merits. That was our conversation.
Yes.
But effective altruism only works if you care to impact the world and you have the ability to.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have the resources to do the things we talked about in the show, well, that's a problem. And then effective altruism may not be the best way to look at this. And the other thing is, if you simply don't care about, or that's not your metric anyway.
Mm-hmm.
If impacting the world, impacting the most people is not your metric, then that also doesn't work. So I think the problem we had in that episode is we took those to be axioms. But for our listeners, I guess our hope is still that these are axioms that you agree with. And if they are, then what we said in the episode still stands true. I think I still stand by them.
Yeah, I stand by them as well. And I also want to just throw out the fact that while that might not be true, I like to choose to live in a hopeful mindset where, number one, people do believe that impacting the world in a positive way is a goal that they strive toward. That may not be the case, and we acknowledge that right now, that may not be the case. And number two, that to say, well, you know what, these people don't have the skill set. These people can't possibly attain a skill set seems to be putting ceilings on people. And I don't think either of those is a particularly hopeful or bright way of looking at the world. I choose kindness and I choose hopefulness as opposed to saying, well, and this is probably my teaching background. You know, we are trained and we believe, I think most teachers, that all students can succeed, that all students means all students. That they can do the best that they can do on any given day, that if they want to achieve something, they can. And so I do sort of defend the axioms that we laid out there, but do recognize that, sure, if you don't believe that is the case for people, then sure, absolutely, the goals, the mindset would probably be different for those people. But I think it's better to work under a system where you assume that most or all people do want that and try to influence in that way. And really, I think we're missing the bigger point, which is if you want to make a difference, there are different ways to do it, not just the traditional sort of ways that we talked about back in episode 3, but that maybe there are some other ways to do it if you are so inclined. And we throw that in there now as sort of a caveat. If you are so inclined, that you don't have to feel bad maybe going at it a different way. But we appreciate the feedback. We're not right. We're not, you know, we just have the microphone and get to say what we think. But we do, of course, recognize the fact that, if either of those two premises are not accepted, then yes, we definitely have problems with going about it throughout. We laid out in the episode.
Right. The next episode was about the next 100 years. We were kind of taking a futuristic view of where society was headed.
And so where are we at on that 100-year timeline?
Yeah, we're 2 months in.
Okay.
And, not much, really. So, you know, maybe we were wrong.
Yeah.
But I think I still stand by the assumptions we made, the predictions we made.
Yep, stand by it. And one of the things, interestingly enough, a recent development I was just reading about this morning, because I believe, if I remember correctly, within the context of the episode, we talked about the importance that lawmakers would play in sort of helping to shape this next 100 years, There's a bipartisan bill that is working its way through Congress that is really opening up sort of the self-driving car market a little bit as far as loosening some of the regulations, but really, which is good, I think, but which also sort of more uniformly across our country, not the state hodgepodge that we've got going on now, but more uniformly lays out some policies, which makes sense. So it does sound like some of the Congress people are listening to our podcast and are taking it to heart, which is good to know. Good to know that we've got an in the Beltway there in Washington, D.C., that they are considering this, because I think we alluded to within that episode, it was very important that our policymakers were forward-thinking when it came to this, if we're going to navigate these next 100 years successfully. So I think a heartening development since we recorded episode 4 is this idea that our legislators can get things done in a bipartisan way, using some of that social capital we talked about in episode 8.
Fun. They're all linking together.
They really are. Yes.
Productivity was our fifth episode, and I don't have anything particular to add.
Mr. Johnson, the technological dinosaur, as I have come to be known, actually reflected a little bit on that episode and have been using, I can't remember the name of the app, but it's basically something that keeps a list for me, but allows me to prioritize things in different ways. So remember back in episode 5, I believe it was, we talked about sort of categorizing things according to a matrix, and I think it was the Eisenhower matrix, and putting some things, trying to get to the high importance things as opposed to the urgent things. I mean, and that was one thing that my previous system was not allowing for, and so being able to adapt to that, there's one that allows me to sort of categorize things in those ways, and maybe be just a little bit more productive with my time, and which is a limited resource with 4 young boys. So, so I guess I've evolved a little bit from my previous thinking. Not that I wasn't open-minded to it, I just didn't know. And again, I think this is one of the common themes that we've talked about throughout our podcasts, which has been the importance of growth and the importance of education. Not that people aren't willing to change, but sometimes you just don't know how to change, and having open ears and open minds, I think is an important part of that. So I guess I've evolved a little bit since episode 5 with some productivity apps, which have been helpful.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about which productivity apps, or?
Well, I don't remember the name. That's the story. Next season, I'll make sure I've got it. And of course, I don't carry a phone with me. and it's on my iPad at home, so I don't know. Maybe we can throw it in the show notes.
Sure.
At the end, and people can. It's got a little smiley face. I don't know the name of it. But it has been useful. It is certainly, especially at home with some of my bigger tasks, the list of items that my wife has for me to complete. It has been helpful as far as organizing my thinking when things start to pile up. We'll add it to the show notes. I can't remember. Funny enough.
Right.
But anyway, onward we go.
Yes.
Episode 6 was college admissions, and it sounds like you've got an interesting idea as far as sort of changing the maybe changing the process a little bit.
Yeah, so I was thinking about it a little bit, right? And it kind of feels like senior year just gets, I mean, we're wrapping up senior year now, right?
Yeah.
And it feels like senior year just becomes the whole college admissions process, and then at some points, like, not caring about school anymore.
Senioritis.
Right.
Yes.
And it just seems like a waste of a year, I guess, from an objective point of view anyway.
Yeah, learning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I guess the idea I had was, what if you were to move the entire college admissions process back to the summer before senior year?
Okay.
Now, you'd extend it like a month into the into senior year and junior year, probably, so that, you know, people who aren't in town or whatever, it works for everyone.
Sure.
But I think it would remove a lot of the stress that's felt at the beginning of the school year. It would allow you to spend more time on your application.
Yes.
And put things together in the summer.
Yes.
It would create, I guess, at the end of your junior year, you'd be asking for recommendations and getting everything sorted out. So you go into the summer with a better plan.
Sure.
And then what you could possibly do is, you know, senior year could be some sort of like project, I guess.
Ooh.
That you spend the year doing, you know?
I like that.
And a lot of schools have senior projects, but they're a month long at most. And I don't know. I feel like there's some interesting ideas here that might be worth thinking about.
Just hearing this for the first time, I can't help but then think, okay, so what if I'm not going to college, which that's not on my plans?
Right.
It seems as though internship would be a perfect mm-hmm. a perfect opportunity then for someone who doesn't see themselves as college bound, where they can maybe start to develop some of those skills and be trained so that they can hit the ground running with maybe a field of their choice.
Right, because I feel like our system doesn't transition well to the next level in a lot of ways, right? Like if you're going straight into a job, I feel like you're not getting the skills you need specifically for that job when you leave high school.
That's true. And the other thing is from an employment perspective, from a business perspective, they would have huge numbers of people coming in to basically work not for free, but they'd be able to sort of field that crop and see what they've got coming in
mm-hmm.
At a pretty low risk sort of situation for them, right? I mean, if they've got tons of people doing internships and sort of exploring their companies, it seems as though that would be, from a business perspective, and I don't have a background in that, but it seems as though that would be a benefit for them as well.
The problem here probably is that there just aren't enough internships and things that could be created even to make this work.
Well, but that goes back to, I wonder, what percentage of high school seniors consider themselves college bound?
Right.
Probably a large number.
Yeah, I mean, here at JM, it's over 50, I think.
Yeah, so I mean, so you take those kids out, they're doing senior projects of sorts. Now, what that senior project looks like over the course of a year.
A year is a long time for a senior project. A
year's a long time. And who's going to oversee that? Would it be teachers? Would it be college professors?
It could be groups of people too, right?
Could be community members, yeah. Potentially. So yeah, I think it's got some interesting potential that might be worth looking at.
Well, I think what would be nice is if it was a mix of like a senior project and classes, because you reach senior year and you still want to take, for example, you want to take AP classes so you can, you know, hit the ground running when you get to college.
Of course.
And some people probably want to load up on AP classes so they can get all those credits.
Sure.
While some people know their credits won't transfer or just don't want to.
Yeah.
And so you have this, you know, I think you have to try to appease both.
Yeah.
There are valid concerns on both sides here.
Sure. And I think it could be an option. You know, I think that's where maybe we don't totally wholesale change to that, but we say these are options, right? So if you know you're not going to college because you've decided on a different route, maybe senior year could be that sort of internship sort of situation. And if you know you are going to college and, you know, you're on the other end of the spectrum where you have so many AP credits they can't possibly transfer anymore, or they just won't transfer at all, maybe providing you with a different option that enriches your learning in a different way might not be a bad idea.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, our next episode is voting theory.
Yeah.
And I have to start out with a correction.
Okay.
I kept talking about, what did I say, concordant voting or something?
I think so.
Yeah, just wrong. It's not pronounced that way. It's not spelled that way. It's C-O-N-D-O-R-C-E-T, which is Condorcet.
Okay.
So I was just referencing something that isn't a thing, basically.
Oh, okay.
I just want to clarify
that
the voting system we were talking about is Condorcet.
So, okay, yeah. Okay. Well, and if you followed us along the way, in episode 9, was it?
Yes.
I referenced a story about voting that I'll share with you now, and especially in light of our episode on voting. I'm part of a group where there was a vote that was going to take place, essentially what had happened was that I serve as a representative. And my job was to vote based on the desires of my constituents. There were three options provided originally that we were supposed to go back and get feedback for. So we did that. And then it came to be that no change was also an option. So essentially an option 4 was added in. So I went back to my constituents after the fact and said, I apologize. I didn't realize that we had four options, the fourth one being no change. I need your feedback again. So I gather the feedback from my constituents. I come back to the meeting, and I am told then that we can only vote for one of the three options that is originally provided. So therefore, my feedback that I received the second time is worthless. Well, it was clarified that no change, in fact, was an option. So it's very confusing for all of the people in the room. These are educated people, people with college degrees. So it comes up that we don't really know if we're voting on three options or four options. No one in the room knows, including the person who will be taking our feedback back, taking our feedback and voting based on how we vote. Okay, so it's sort of this multi-tiered group of representatives. So the idea comes up that we should have two separate votes, a vote where there are four options and a vote where there are only three options. Okay, so this is fine. Immediately, we vote for the, they say, all right, who is in favor of no change, this being option four? Approximately 40% of the people raise their hand. They proceed to say, okay, since 50% of the people, since we don't have a majority, we'll move on to the second vote, which is not correct, all right, as we know. It could have been very easily with four options, 40% not receiving majority but receiving a plurality, could have been the winning option. So they say, okay, now we're moving on to vote two. And if you were going to vote no change, if you voted no change, now disperse your votes to others.
What?
Exactly. So option one, who's in favor? About a good majority of the people voted, well over 50%. So they, okay, option one has it. There's no more need to vote. Well, I immediately motioned to reconsider, saying, okay, you just had 40% of the people voting for no change. They very easily could have cast their votes then again for vote one. So after some discussion in which people in some way sort of ridiculed my train of thought, which was accurate, I will say, it was backed up and it was supported. And okay, so yes, now we need to revote. When the next vote for, so it was, okay, who is in favor of no change? Only approximately 6% of the people then voted for no change. Then they voted for option one, which had approximately, 66% or so, two-thirds of the room. So it was adopted. So my question is, what happened to change 40% of the people voting to 6? It was they didn't understand. They did not understand what was happening. And this was a room full of educated people who cared about what they, presumably, cared about what they were voting for. And I think it brought up really two issues. Number one, we like to think that voters will be able to easily follow changes to the voting systems. And that may not be the case. And number two, it was explained terribly. It was explained poorly. And this was a relatively low stakes vote. I mean, it mattered. It matters to people. And it's unfortunate that the will of the group was actually realized. But this was low stakes. What could happen if this occurred on a grander and more consequential scale is potentially scary. So I think this was a small example of where a voting system can fail if the people in charge of the system don't really explain it well or don't really understand it very well, and if the group of people voting is not informed. Yeah. So
it's interesting, though, because you go for multiple choices, right?
Yes.
And there could be multiple reasons for there being so many people saying no, right? They could simply not understand it.
Yes.
Or when given multiple other options, the default could just be, even if you understand all of them, it's like, there's so many variants of change, I'll let others figure out the best option first.
Yes.
And that could have been what happened too.
Yes.
Right? Because once they eliminated the other two, it's like, okay, it's between two things. We either do nothing or this plan that clearly has support.
Yes.
Let's just go with the support.
Yes.
So it might have also been just the default until they had more information.
Exactly.
About, or, you know, you don't want to waste your vote and split it between three different things. So you're trying to get some information.
Yes.
Which is what instant runoff does, right?
Right.
Because one will get eliminated, but from that first vote, you get to see, oh, this guy's at 40, or this vote is at 49% for this.
Yes.
If I back it, it should hit 50.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
And that's how, like, backroom balloting works, right?
Yeah.
When you are jockeying for votes, right? That's the thing. You see who's leading, and then you're like, okay, I can give you my support.
Yes.
And that should get you enough.
Yes. Right. Right. Exactly.
Because usually the ideal there is that the person leading the vote won't be losing votes is usually the assumption, right?
Yes,
and,
right.
And here it's interesting because the thing that led lost a significant amount of votes.
Right.
So
it was just, I mean, I just shook my head, and one of my colleagues next to me who I think understood what was going on, just it was pure shock that had happened. So so it was just a very in my face example of the potential difficulties with getting an accurate representation.
The other problem, I think, is also when the person critiquing the voting system is usually the one who just lost a vote.
Yes.
And then it comes off as petty.
Right, exactly. And I to be clear, I had no stake in the vote. I think our unit, our group, school did a very good job of, we were simply voting based on the vote that we had at our school. So we asked all of our constituents to fill out a survey, and we just decided to take our own personal beliefs out of it and vote proportionally, right? So if I think half of our people voted for option one, then half of our representatives voted for option one.
Wait, but then so this problem was even worse then, because you had the split vote at the lowest level, and that was working its way up.
Exactly.
Right? And you didn't have people who could change that vote and try to coalesce around something.
No, exactly. Well, but that was at our building. See, at other buildings, I don't know what the process is. It's a very bad
system.
Oh, yes. And it's compounded by the fact that that people just didn't necessarily care. Like, okay, let's get this vote over with, right? So, well, okay. Option one. Okay, great. Let's just vote for that. And the hunch is, my hunch is that it wasn't necessarily the will of the voters going through. So it was just an interesting, I think, example of some of the difficulties that can arise with the complexities of voting systems. So all the more reason for, I think, systems that really work to get that will across. So just an interesting takeaway, I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay, on to episode 8.
Which we have not much really to say. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that we recorded it. And
Right.
I mean,
yeah, so it was social capital, and we just talked about sort of the idea that there's a certain bank account that exists out there in society and within individual relationships and connections that are made there. One thing that I sort of think about and reflect upon in my old school way of thinking is there are certain social events, I guess, that occur, and I think we talked about this in another episode as well, but certain social events that occur, things like, to me, that are, whether it be the Super Bowl, Halloween, the 4th of July, certain events where there's a certain contract that's almost followed. And I think the individualization of our society, it is even more important for events like this that sort of bind us together when other things sort of do not bind us together.
And I think that's also connecting back to what we talked about in our first episode, which was having this set of shared goals, a vision. It was something we referenced from the Power of Myth.
Yes.
Having routines. I think it ties into routines too.
Yes, it does.
Having these norms that everyone follows and is beholden to.
Yes.
And then that creates capital too while doing it.
Yes.
So, and a lot of these ideas kind of connect together there.
Yes. And I think, you know, other binding ideas. One nation under God. I mean, that's for a long time, that was the binding principle. Mm. I don't think that's necessarily as true anymore, for better or worse. But there are, I mean, I think in order for a society to exist, there have to be some binding social contracts that have to exist. And whatever they are, and inherently they will change, and some will gain more importance and less importance than others. But I think it's very important from a social standpoint that those bonds and bridges exist to sort of hold us together as a society. Because outside of that, it's just a bunch of lines on a map. And that's not really much of anything, obviously. Which brings us to our last episode, which was, well, kind of chaotic, which is interestingly enough. But we started with chaos and sort of the order that exists within it. We moved on to a little bit of statistics and some maybe fallacies within statistics. Any big changes since then? I mean, I can't think of any that come to mind. Or any reflections that you have in light of the episode?
Nothing specific. What I did think about, and I guess it was something we wanted to talk about in this episode, was just the general principle of mathematical thinking that we've kind of emphasized throughout all of our episodes. Yeah. And I guess the idea is just to, you know, consider the axioms being used to look at things more objectively, to try to find how things fit together, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I think our last episode actually did that a little more rigorously, I feel like.
I would say so.
We looked at things where we could say definitively, like, this is true,
right,
here's why, or apply mathematical theories to the real world.
Yeah, and just so we're clear for our listeners, the largely the goal and the purpose behind this podcast was, one of the goals was, to sort of explore this more logical and mathematical way of approaching some systems that exist within our society. We're not necessarily saying that's the only way to think, that it's the, quote, right way to think. It's maybe just a different way than a lot of people approach things.
I'd actually make a broad claim here and say that the podcast has been closer to real math than math in the classroom is on average.
Yeah.
Or on median, I guess.
There, nice. Referencing back to episode 9, I believe it was. Yes. Well done. I think you're right. And I think, you know, I hear from a lot of people, parents, students, and community members in general, that say largely, I just hate math. It's just so hard. Math is so difficult. And yet, I think it's largely because of the way we teach it. Mm-hmm. We teach it as a set of right answers and wrong answers. We teach it as you need to work fast. You can't work with anyone else. Sit in your desk, be quiet, and we seek compliance as opposed to problem solving.
I was at a math competition recently, mm-hmm. And somebody comes up to give a short speech, right?
Yeah.
And the speech they gave, the thing they mentioned, was that they were a philosophy-turned-math major in college or something along those lines.
Sure.
And they'd start conversations with people and say, oh, I'm studying math.
Mm-hmm.
The first response would be, oh, I failed geometry. Yeah. Or, darn, I hated math. Yep. And if he started conversations with, I'm a philosophy major, he'd get extremely interesting conversations. People wanted to know what he did and what it involved. But the things he would be saying are the exact same because philosophy and math are so interconnected.
Absolutely.
And it's interesting that this happens, right?
Yeah.
And his point was something that I had explicitly thought about before, which is, you know, in high school and up until high school at least, for sure, math is taught as arithmetic. It's just arithmetic.
Yes, only.
And his point is something I've always said, is that I wish we called math until, you know, you get to college at least, arithmetic.
Yes. Right? Yes.
I think even that small change would greatly change our perception of math as a society.
I like that a lot. And unfortunately, what we currently do is we build walls. We tell people, you know, no, you're not good at this because you're not the fastest, or because you made a mistake here or a mistake there. And let's be honest, in many situations in arithmetic and in mathematics, there are correct answers. So that's just inherently true. I think it's just incumbent upon mathematicians in general to see math as a way to solve problems, and a way to try to explain humanity, explain the world. And if we use math in that way, it's a very exciting thing. Math instruction is, in my view, one of the very few things in education where we decrease people's interest and desire to learn it, right, over the course of time, where we make it harder than it needs to be, just for the sake of arithmetic or ease of grading, as opposed to trying to build a love of the subject, which I think is far more important than your ability to do fast sums.
Right, and my fear is that we're scaring away our future best mathematicians by telling them that the real test of a mathematician is being able to multiply numbers quickly.
Yes.
Right? I just pulled up the story of a famous mathematician, mm-hmm. right? What's his name? Grothendieck? But I do remember that he was a very talented mathematician, one of the best in his time. And it's so he's known to think of math problems in such an abstract way that he never actually considers examples, right?
Sure.
And so, you know, he's probably not that good at arithmetic and that kind of thing. That's not his strength, right?
Right.
And so in a conversation, somebody asked him to give him an example, and he's like, "You mean an actual number?" And the other person said, "Yes, an actual prime number." They were talking about something related to prime numbers. Sure. And then he responds, "All right, consider 57. Right?
Yeah.
Completely serious.
A brilliant
right?
mathematician.
A brilliant mathematician can't do prime numbers.
Yes. Yes.
Well, by our high school definitions of math.
He's a failure.
He's a failure.
Yes.
And he might even struggle in high school math.
Yes.
Right?
Well,
but he is one of the world's best mathematicians.
Well, and I'll make a more personal example for me. I have a son in first grade who they study patterns. And there was a pattern which was, I think, circle, square, square, circle, square, square. Mm-hmm. And the teacher said, you know, "Okay, Archie, what comes next?" Well, circle, square, square means what comes next? Circle, right? Well, my son put triangle, right? And triangle, Archie, what are you doing? Well, he then proceeded to complete the pattern, which was, circle, square, square, triangle. So he took a pattern of 3 and just changed it to a pattern of 7. Mm-hmm. Well, in modern instruction, that is marked wrong, right? Because you should have put circle. So it kills the creativity of math. It's the same thing as, and I understand why they do it, but time tests in elementary school. So my son, he gets a minute, I think, to do as many addition problems as he can. So he gets 19 or something. Well, hey, John, what did you get? Well, I got 24. Who's more successful? John. Doesn't matter that Archie got all 19 right or that John got 3 wrong and 21 out of 24. It's simply speed. And how many instances in let's say, quote, real world, is it important that you can complete sums very, very quickly?
Nowadays, it's not important at all.
It's not important at all.
You have a calculator, right?
Exactly. It's completely replaced, and yet we still equate that with success mathematically. So I think this idea of thinking mathematically, I hope our podcast has opened up the idea of some ways that math can be used to think and solve problems that have nothing to do with, I mean, how many times did we multiply in the course of this podcast? Very few.
How many times do we have actual numbers, actually?
Very few times, right?
Like we sit up here and we keep saying, right, we're not experts,
right?
Right, and we don't even act like we are.
No,
we don't try to like pull up stats all the time or anything. No.
Well, and if we do need numbers, what do? We go to a computer,
right? We don't need to know them ahead of time.
No.
But the idea throughout all these episodes for us has been to use the kind of thinking that's used in math.
Yes.
And something we've talked about, and we haven't said it explicitly in the show many times, but it's always been in the back of our minds that can we bring that math perspective that we do know,
right?
And can we turn that into reasonable analysis of these interesting topics.
Because I do think one thing that math, the learning of math does for us is increases our ability to think logically and critically, if done correctly. I think in many math classrooms that's not the case. And there are times in my classroom where I'm sure it should be better. But we should at least be striving toward that, the ability to think logically and critically about problems of the day. it is very much similar to philosophy, right? Math and philosophy, not that much different. And yet math sort of does it in a more, I hate to say rigorous way, but in a more structured way, maybe. But where if you fuse the two together, I think largely that's what our podcast has been about, is this idea that you could apply the ability to look at a problem, analyze it, and attempt to solve that system is something that we strive to do. And so I think that has certainly been a common theme throughout, at least threaded throughout many of these episodes, is can we analyze it? Can we break it down, and can we just propose some solutions? Again, not claiming to be experts at all, simply using the ability to think logically and critically about situations to say, could this work? Maybe, maybe not, but it's at least worth considering.
Right, and on the topic of could this work, right, I think we also tried to make our episodes a little more impact-oriented.
Yeah.
We tried to find ways that, you know, you, dear listener, could do something with the information we gave you.
Yes.
You know? Well, either it was routines and telling you, you know, how you could change up your own routines, meaningful life and impact, how you could, you know, find the same level of impact, productivity, right? Those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Or just different ways of thinking, you know, with social capital, for example, finding another way to view social interactions in general.
And or the importance of just being aware.
Yeah.
Even if we couldn't necessarily say this is the way that we would solve the problem, just being aware that, and maybe it isn't even a problem. Maybe it's just a system that we've set up in our own lives or communities that we need to be aware of it. I mean, that to me is exactly what we're doing with self-driving cars, the next 100 years, what learning environments could look like, the college admissions process. Maybe it's not even a problem. Maybe it's just a system that needs to be understood in a little bit different ways, how it was set up and why it's set up this way, and things we can do to sort of improve it. So I think that's another thing that I think has been threaded throughout, is the importance of just being aware of things. Is something that I think we've strived and hopefully achieved throughout the course of these podcasts.
Right. And not just solving systems, but just, you know, noticing systems, I guess.
Yeah.
Or understanding systems.
Yeah.
But then we lose the math pun. But
we do.
Yeah.
It's, the math pun is important. Plus, we have the cool logo. So
Yeah. Maybe it's too late to change the name.
Yeah. Definitely too late. Yeah. We've got name recognition. We don't want to blow that. Yeah.
Right.
Definitely. So another common thread, I think, that has sort of been woven throughout all of a lot of our episodes, at least, is technology and sort of how that's changing the game, maybe in some ways. And I've certainly shown my ignorance as far as technology and its uses. But I think it's also been important that, and sort of linking it to the awareness, is just being aware and cognizant of the great benefits we can get from technology, but also the potential pitfalls and the things that are lost when it takes a more centralized role in our lives, in our interactions, thinking about how technology affects our ability to build social capital and how it changes that, how it potentially changes our routines, how it changes our productivity, and certainly, excuse me, how it affects our next 100 years. I think it's obviously fair to say that that technology is going to be a big part of the next 100 years. So I think that's another thing that we've hit on multiple episodes that we could maybe flesh out a little bit, which is this idea of technology, good, bad, both, neither, not really anything. It's just there. Is it a tool? Is it something that threatens humanity? Is it something that supplements humanity? We've sort of touched on that in various ways, but certainly something, again, worth being aware of and considering.
Yeah, it's something I've been more cognizant of too since we started recording to where we are now, is just trying to notice where technology is in my life.
Sure.
I mean, I, like most people my age, I'm constantly on my phone or my laptop or whatever.
Yep.
And I've made more conscious efforts to reduce that time in, I guess, in meaningful ways too, not just like saying, okay, I'm putting my phone away for a bit.
Right.
But like, for example, a few days ago, I was with friends and we all just, you know, threw our phones in a pile. And this has happened with multiple different groups, not just like this one group of people.
Sure.
And then to just go 2 or 3 hours where there's this social pressure too, not only to interact and, you know, just interact like you normally would
yes.
with people, but and spend quality time, but to also not touch your phone, because there's now the social pressure in the group that if you head toward the pile, everyone's looking at you and you have to explain why, you have to explain your actions and you have to defend yourself. And just changing the pressure from instead of it being the default thing to be on your phone, to make it the default thing to not be on your phone.
Sure.
And it's like a routine change almost.
Yeah.
Instead of when it's not on your body either, when you can't just reach for your pocket and grab the distraction.
Which is a natural thing, right? Kind of. Yeah.
When there's a slight lull in the conversation, you get out your phone. Bam, you're out of the conversation for the next at least 5 minutes.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And this was just something that I noticed that in the groups where we do this, we have more meaningful and just better conversations, better interactions.
Yeah.
In the groups we don't, it's never like a full group thing. People are just distracted.
Well, and I think this is an interesting thing potentially for our listeners because, you know, I, who am not very technologically savvy, have actually maybe upticked slightly in my use upon reflecting after our episodes, which I think is interesting. And you, who maybe are
regression to the mean,
exactly,
is the statistical term for
yes,
this.
Yes, I think right? I think we're both headed in the same general direction, which is interesting. And I think it's part of that bigger idea of awareness that whether you are the most technologically sound or the least, that you're at least aware of the good and bad of the other side, that maybe you can draw from the good and leave the bad behind. And this is where we're talking about gray areas, right? Which is, there's not a right or wrong answer to this question, to this system, but that rather that we can maybe try to improve by pulling the best from both sides.
Because even here we have axioms. Yeah. We're starting off with axioms that we support, you know, I guess, well thought out thoughts. You know,
yeah.
We like to do more intellectual things,
sure.
I guess. We also don't like to waste time. We have all of these assumptions built in here.
Yeah.
And all of these are not true for everyone.
Definitely
you
not.
Know?
No.
Our interests are not, you know, like both of us would probably say getting real time updates on sports games is probably not what we want on our phones.
Not the most important thing for
right.
us.
Right.
But
we don't want to be distracted out of our you know, our other lives with quotes around that.
Right.
That. But there's some people who want that.
Yes.
Right. And we're disregarding that aspect of other people's lives when
yes.
we make our claims. So.
Right. So, and we are aware that
right.
our way is not the quote right way. But it's just a perspective, and hopefully our listeners understand that.
Yeah, and I guess one other thing I was thinking about was that this podcast has been a good way for us to turn that mathematical thinking we were talking about and expose it to, I guess, an audience that hasn't engaged with math as much as we've been fortunate to.
Sure.
And I guess something that we specifically were thinking about was that it for a lot of people who end up in these fields, right, where you're, you know, either like a scientist or a mathematician, that kind of thing, it becomes really hard to turn that kind of thinking and show it to a less inclined audience, right?
Sure.
And to get others as enthused as you are about something can be difficult.
Yeah.
But to share that kind of thinking is something that I think is a little more doable. At the same time, I think it requires a lot more planning and thought to turn these ideas into something that's accessible to everyone. And that's what we've been hoping to do, at least.
And I think that's especially true when you have a subject like math where people may have had negative experiences in the past, where, you know, their first knee-jerk reaction when they hear math is, oh, I failed geometry. That's a tougher thing to do, but not a less important thing, and maybe even a more important thing. And because, you know, when I'm at conferences and there's a parent sitting there with their son or daughter, and the parent says, well, I was never good at math. I think that's a harmful, mindset to pass on to your child who is trying to learn math and the fact that it's important. So I think anything we can do to put a dent in the mentality that math isn't important or it's not applicable is good, and I think has been an admirable goal and hopefully at least a somewhat achieved goal of this podcast is, like you said, taking math out of the realm of irrelevant and unimportant and making it something that is relevant and maybe just a mindset shift. So mm-hmm. I hope we've been successful on some level with that. Our listeners are the ultimate judges, of course, but for me, it's at least made my thinking change slightly as far as the importance of reaching out and attempting to explain things.
Yeah, being that bridge, as we talked about.
Yeah, within our societal capital. Yeah, definitely. So hopefully we've served to be that for our listeners. I guess we don't know unless we hear from people, but I think it's been an admirable goal and maybe one that has been achieved. So so the future is something that we would certainly like to talk about and maybe just from a personal standpoint, let's start there, because some of our listeners probably feel like they know us a little bit more after listening to these episodes. So what's the date today? June 7th of 2017. What does the future hold for Nikhil Marda?
Yeah, so this is probably a few weeks before it comes out, so I don't know if anything has changed yet.
Sure.
But, I will be headed off to college in September.
Yep.
So not doing much until then. Mm-hmm. I guess tentatively I'm thinking of studying math, computer science, that kind of thing.
Cool.
But also kind of branching out and trying some other things. You know, yeah. Psychology, political science, that kind of stuff.
Nice.
See what... I don't know. I guess I don't see myself doing a pure academic field.
Mm-hmm.
But rather finding something interdisciplinary and going from there.
Cool.
So I guess that's where I'm at right now.
Cool. And for Mr. Johnson on the verge of summer vacation, I've got a busy life at home with four young boys. We've got our summer fun list planned. Every year we generate a list of activities that we want to do. This year it's lengthy. The boys are ambitious this year. So a lot of little things, lemonade stand, running through the sprinkler, nothing grand, but I found a bunch of small activities can add up to be something pretty special. Professionally for me, next year I'm embarking on a new class that I'll be teaching here at John Marshall, which is basically a fusion of geometry and algebra 2, two subjects that do have a lot of overlap. It's just not really found too often. So try to make math a bit more, again, interconnected, and also raise the bar for some of our students who maybe were missed at a younger age. Try to get them into the math world a little bit more. So that's an exciting new adventure. I'll be teaching calculus again next year, as far as I know. Which is always an exciting challenge to get students where they need to be, and I'm also looking at other opportunities just for professional and personal growth, both within education and outside of education. So I'm very passionate about sort of trying to make improvements in our communities. So whether it's working with a new math group that's starting up or getting involved in sort of local and national politics. Those are all things that I've sort of been looking at and am excited to explore. But as far as I know, year 12 next year at John Marshall High School will be an exciting one and something that we're going to make great for our students. So obviously with Nikhil going off to college and that sort of complicates things for our podcast. Usually we record
We got on a good schedule here.
We did. We were on a very good schedule.
I mean, for I guess our listeners should know a little bit about our logistics.
Yeah. We're not in a studio.
No. So we actually record most of the time anyway in one of the conference rooms in the building.
Yep.
It's relatively quiet. Once in a while, if you hear something in the back, those are people.
Yes. That's right.
But we record. For the most part, we've been recording on Thursdays, so we'll record one Thursday and then release the next episode, the Thursday after.
Yep.
And so we're on this, 2-week rotation.
Yep, which has worked well.
Yeah, it's worked very well, I think.
But obviously, that will change potentially a little bit next year because Nikhil will be hundreds of miles away. So it may complicate things a bit as far as our timeline. We don't know necessarily what the plan is for future seasons and episodes, but either way, we have appreciated the feedback that we've received, and if you have, working under the assumption that there may be future seasons, if you have other feedback that you would like to throw our way, we really appreciate it. Hit them with the email address again.
Yes, Mikhail. solvingsystemspodcast@gmail.com.
So if you have thoughts about the direction of our podcast, I mean, basically at the outset here, it was sort of an idea which was born out of just good conversations within my classroom. We thought, you know what, maybe some people would care to hear this. And it was, we generated a list of ideas, things that we thought would be interesting to talk about. We talked about them and have almost exhausted our list. Right?
Yeah. I mean, we got through everything we had on there, I think. Yeah. Everything we ended up bolding and saving for an actual episode, I think we talked about them.
Yep.
And so.
So if there's other things you'd like us to talk about, if there's a crying demand for, more information, send it our way and we will definitely consider it. But I think either way, whether we have season two or season three or season one, I'm very proud of the fact that we've got about 10 hours of recorded information here, and I think some good thoughts that can be foundations for good conversations for others. So either way, I'm quite proud of what we did here. I hope our listeners found it to be redeeming. If you've made it this far with us, presumably you did find it at least somewhat redeeming, which is good to know, at least from my perspective.
Yeah, it's been a learning experience for both of us, but I hope it was a learning experience for everyone. And I guess I'm glad we've been able to share our thoughts and our experiences and also hear those of others in response to ours. So
yeah,
it's just been a good experience all around.
It really has been. Yep. And we definitely have learned a lot. And we thank you for listening. Otherwise we're just talking into microphones in an empty room, which isn't so bad.
No.
Even if no one's listening, that's okay. So if you've got things you'd like to say, shoot them to us in an email. We do read them and we do consider them. So I think that's pretty good. I think we've nailed everything we need to hit here in episode 10, the last episode of season one. And unless you have something else you'd like to say, this is Mr. Johnson signing off.
Yep, this is Nikhil signing off. We'll end it like we normally do. See you back here next time for season two.
There you go. Thank you. Have a blessed and wonderful break if we don't talk soon.